Good afternoon, Laurier. How's everybody doing? It is Wednesday, March 30th, 2022. I hope everyone's enjoying this sort of cold spring. I wish the weather would just get warmer already. And yeah, welcome to the show. Raji's not here today, but me and Fatima will take care of you guys. So yeah, welcome to the show.
Yeah, okay, so just to start things off on a lighter note, and just talking about COVID, so Ontario COVID numbers currently right now, it's 790 people in the hospital, 165 in intensive care, so that's a reporting. It's up by 135 for hospitalizations and an increase of 7 in ICU since the previous day, because hospitals have submitted their updated numbers. And on Monday, so last Tuesday, there was about 639 hospitalizations with 179 in ICU. Of the 790 people in hospital with COVID-19, 47% of them were admitted because of the virus, and the other 53% were admitted for other reasons but tested positive for COVID-19. And of the 165 people in ICU with the virus, 72% were admitted because of COVID, while the 27% were admitted for other reasons. And the death toll in the province has risen to 12,414 as 9 more virus-related deaths were added. And Tuesday's report said that 7 of the deaths occurred within the last month and 2 deaths occurred more than a month ago. So that's where we're at with COVID. And then something else is kind of more local as well, just a topic of like the bird flu that's been going around. So the Toronto Zoo closes RIVs after bird flu was detected in southern Ontario. So the zoo made an announcement in a series of tweets saying that they're committed to the health and safety of the animals in their care. The Toronto Zoo said it is taking proactive steps to protect its birds from the influenza that has been confirmed in a wild bird in southern Ontario. So this comes after the Canadian Food Inspection Agency, CFIA, reported that the bird flu had been detected at a poultry farm in southern Ontario. And the agency said that the farm is under a strict quarantine and the CFIA is establishing movement controls and recommending higher biosecurity at nearby farms. It says it confirmed the presence of the highly pathogenic H5N1 strain of the flu that is spreading around the world among wild birds. And earlier this month, the agency confirmed that the flu had been found in a wild red-tailed hawk in Waterloo, Ontario as well. So there's that. And then just for something else that's more local to KW, the ion track components have gone missing. So the Waterloo police are investigating after the ion track components went missing in the city of Kitchener over the weekend. And according to police officers that were there to investigate the incident on Monday, a couple of days after the metal components and wiring went missing from the lines near Hayward Avenue and the CN Rail around 5 p.m., they say that the theft caused service disruptions on Saturday night and along the rails of the Grand River Transit. And I'm pretty sure everything's running well right now. But the police spokesperson told Global News that investigators could not be certain of the motivation for the theft, but it seems that it was likely profit motivated. So typically thefts similar to this, metal components and wiring will be sold for profit. So there's that. I think that's about it for what I have to say.
Okay. I guess I'll talk about some international news. Mm-hmm. So I guess I'll start with some updates from the Ukraine conflict. So there's been sort of attempted kind of peace talks between between Russia and Ukraine, between Zelensky and Putin's governments, essentially. And so Zelensky said he is open to Ukraine becoming a neutral country, but he said such a decision could only be made by a nationwide referendum after Russia withdraws its troops. So he's essentially saying that they could become neutral if the people basically vote on becoming neutral, which I don't even think would happen, but there is some progress there. And so this kind of comes after Joe Biden made a sort of out-of-line remark about Putin. I wouldn't say out-of-line, but sort of antagonizing remark. So the White House tried to walk back Joe Biden's remark from a speech he made in Poland on Saturday, this past Saturday, claiming Putin needed to be removed from power, like straight up said Putin needed to be removed from power. And I guess a lot of people would be like kind of wondering what is so wrong with that, considering the sanctions and sort of the just open hostilities between Russia and the U.S. And I think it's more just that he's basically fully called for Putin to be removed, which is not necessarily an act of like war, or more sort of like a calculated act of aggression in a sense. Like, it could be interpreted from the Kremlin and sort of could be twisted. It could be just interpreted in different ways that would not benefit the situation. Honestly, that remark has kind of strained Russia and the United States' already kind of tumultuous relationship. So we'll see how that works out. So Democratic Congress member Ro Khanna and Quincy Institute President Andrew Bashbish said, quote, "The responsibility to negotiate with the Russians to come to a settlement that is agreeable to Ukrainians, that responsibility belongs to President Zelensky." So he's basically saying, Putin, you need to calm down a little bit with the remarks. And then Bashbish called Biden's comments, quote, "reckless and damaging." Well, Khanna added, "The American president does have a leadership role in resolving the crisis, but Biden's remarks were not representative of U.S. foreign policy." And he's basically saying Biden was speaking from the heart rather than from the mind, which is honestly like a good take on that. Mm-hmm. So after these sort of quote unquote peace talks between Zelensky and Putin's governments, Russia has said it will scale back its military activity in northern Ukraine after, quote, meaningful peace talks with Ukraine in Istanbul were held recently, a couple days ago. And Russia's deputy defense minister, Alexander Komin, said Moscow would, quote, radically reduce military activity in the direction of Kyiv and Chechnya. So yeah, the Kremlin's essentially just saying, as the peace talks are progressing, they will start to sort of reduce their military action, not like fully, obviously, but more just less attacks, less strikes, and whatnot. So Ukrainian negotiator David Akeremia said that there were sufficient conditions for a direct meeting between the two heads of state, and he outlined Ukraine's call for an international mechanism of security guarantees. That's almost similar to the NATO's Article 5, which essentially says that it basically grants protection for any NATO country. If it's invaded, the other NATO countries can help defend it, Article 5. The Ukraine wants a similar guarantee, which I don't know how that will go down, honestly, but we'll see. We'll see how these peace talks progress. And so, to switch to some more American news related to Donald Trump and the January 6th riot. So the House committee is investigating the Capitol riots of January 6th. They found a possible cover-up of White House records focusing on Trump's phone logs. So this is pretty interesting. His logs on January 6th feature a 7-hour and 37-minute long phone gap, like, so no calls are recorded,
Mm-hmm.
And this 7-hour gap is basically during the insurrection. So it almost appears as though someone wiped the phone logs or something. Something fishy.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, why did the White House phone logs contain holes in the record, even though they were clearly being used constantly during the insurrection? And the records show that Trump's diary shows an entry at 11:17 a.m. and then doesn't show another one until 6:54 p.m., which just makes no sense considering there was 100% phone calls, White House phone calls during this time. So it appears as though somehow the records have been wiped or removed or tampered with. And this is all during, obviously, the Capitol riots, where a bipartisan Senate report connected 7 deaths to the Capitol riots, so it's not to be taken lightly. And the committee is looking at possible ways in which Trump skirted normal accountability governing telephone calls for a sitting president. So, yeah, it's looking like a strange situation. I don't know how exactly this is going to, what's going to come out of this, but I wouldn't be surprised, obviously, if Trump and his government had something to do, sort of similarly like the Watergate scandal in the 70s with Richard Nixon.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously not the same, exactly the same, but sort of the same principle, sort of covering something up by removing records or destroying records. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen with that. I'm sure Trump's going to be found doing something. Because, I mean, the man literally incited a riot, which was more or less an attempted coup, like, realistically.
Yeah.
Not, like, a well-thought-out and planned-out attempted coup, but they did storm the Capitol, attempt to kill government officials, and honestly, I feel like their goal was to overthrow the government, in a sense, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What else? What else? Fatima, you've nothing. You know, no more stories, right?
Yeah. No. Like those were pretty much what was kind of trending, locally, and stuff. So, yeah.
Okay. I guess I'll just keep going then. Yeah. So. We could talk about the Indigenous People of Canada meeting with the Pope. So, this sort of happened in Canada in the last couple of days. So, Dr. Wilton the Little Child, he is a chief, a 77-year-old chief in Alberta, and he's the chief of the Erminskin Cree Nation in Maskwasis, Central Alberta, excuse my horrible pronunciation. But he is preparing to travel to Rome as part of a delegation of First Nations, Inuit, and Métis residential school survivors who will meet with Pope Francis. So this is kind of a very interesting development. So obviously, the Catholic Church had a lot to do with the residential schools, unfortunately. So church and state-run residential schools operated in Canada from the late 1800s until 1996. I repeat, 1996. So what is that? 30 years ago, a little bit more than that, which is kind of ridiculous. And obviously the goal of these schools was forcibly assimilating the Indigenous children into the mainstream European/North American culture. So around 150,000 Indigenous children are taken from their parents and communities and forced to attend school, where abuse, verbal, physical, sexual, spiritual, and emotional trauma was rampant, and Indigenous languages and cultural practices were banned. These kids would be obviously abused if they would talk their language. They would have their traditional clothes removed, be forced into sort of quote-unquote Western clothes or Western fit, which is absolutely ridiculous, obviously. There was 139 such schools, 139 of these horrible institutions across Canada, and the Catholic Church oversaw 60% of these schools. So over half of these schools was overseen by the Catholic Church. So that is why, if anyone's wondering why they're meeting with Pope Francis specifically. So yeah, now a little child is hopeful that the Pope will apologize for the role that the church played. Quote, he said, this is a quote of Pope Francis, I like him. This is a quote of a little child about Pope Francis. He said, I like him. Quote, when he was presenting his first speech, if you close your eyes, you would have thought he was an indigenous elder because of his concern for the environment and for climate change. Mm-hmm. That's pretty interesting, honestly. And he thought, wow, he was concerned about animals that need to be protected, you know. I thought to myself, now this guy may be the guy that'll apologize. That's a quote from Chief Littlechild. Mm-hmm. And for almost two decades, Littlechild, he's a lawyer and a former member of parliament. He advocated for the head of the Catholic Church to apologize. I find it shocking that there hasn't been an apology up until this point. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's a subject very close to his heart. Many hearts of Canadians, whether they're Indigenous or not, I think everyone can agree this is just unbelievable tragedy and a disaster. Mm-hmm. So little child's parents, they were residential school survivors. The trauma it inflicted upon them meant that they were unable to raise their children. Not surprisingly, extremely traumatic, extremely just recovering from that. Wow, it's hard to even wrap your head around. So little mm-hmm. child lived with his grandparents. It was from them that he was taken when he was just 6 years old, and forced, like his parents before him, to attend a residential school. So he and his parents were both forced to attend a residential school. At the Erminskin residential school, he was given a uniform and his indigenous name was taken from him. He would instead be known as number 65. So not even given a name, not even given an English name, given a number. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that just tells, that's honestly crazy. I never realized until I was reading this article that they would just give them numbers. It's as though they're not human. They're trying to dehumanize these children. Children, mm-hmm. not even adults. So, horrible. So, he stayed at this residential school until the ninth grade when he was transferred to another residential school in Edmonton. And he says, quote, all of the abusers you hear about, I went through them all, unquote. So this man's been through a lot, obviously. Mm-hmm. He had seven sisters and four brothers, and they all attended the same residential school. But he says they were like strangers to one another. I assume because of the conditions and how they're dehumanized. You can't even connect with your own family using your language or your culture because of this horrible institution you're being forced in.
Mm-hmm. And I think that was also like the sole purpose of it as well, right? Where once these children went back to their families or their homes and stuff, they were so isolated, right, from who they are as a whole, like as a people or like as their family and stuff. So I think it's very unfortunate and upsetting and disturbing to hear that even though, like, you know, if you had siblings that were there as well, you just were completely isolated from them as well in that sense, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a complete cultural and epistemological genocide if you really just look at everything. I mean, I don't understand, and I never will understand why, like, the creators of these residential schools, how they thought this would benefit, like, anybody, you know what I'm saying? Because,
yeah, I think it's just, there's so many layers to it, too, right? And yeah. I think it just comes down to concept and ideology of like white supremacy, and also just, you know, there's so many layers to it, right? And so I think that was kind of the motive to just kind of wipe out everyone who's, you know, different and who's not white, and to kind of make them like that. And then in the process of that, you also like dehumanize and you assimilate and you, right? So it's kind of, yeah, it's deeply rooted with colonization and stuff like that too, right? So I would say that I think the curriculum as well, I think it'd be nice if a lot of this was incorporated. Kind of a side note, but yeah, I think we don't really learn about this. Like, I know, like, growing up in middle school and stuff like that, we never learned about it. I think it was up until I reached university and I took some courses and stuff like that, where like I was given the opportunity to kind of like delve deep into it and then discover so much that was like unknown to me before, right? So yeah,
I mean, me personally, I definitely haven't learned about residential schools probably since middle school, honestly. Mm-hmm. I've definitely been taught a lot about them, but I do agree that there's many people, many different schools or curriculums or whatever, mm-hmm. that don't cover this. Like, I grew up in Toronto, so
okay.
They have more of a, it's more multicultural city, obviously. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I just feel as though I definitely learned a lot about residential schools, but mm-hmm. I feel like every time I read an article similar to this, or just the indigenous guest speakers in class, you just learn to understand the pain a little bit more, and you just mm-hmm. realize how long reaching the effects are even to this day. And it's just,
yeah, the generational
trauma. Yeah,
effects. Yeah, sure.
Generational trauma. I mean, to think that people are like, oh, Canada, what a safe and peaceful country, and yet we have a long and storied history of doing what everyone else has done. I guess we're gonna cut this episode a little bit short, just because Rajni's not here, and we've kind of covered everything we have to cover. I think we have one more episode next week, and then we should be done for the semester. So
mm-hmm.
We'll see everybody next week for I'll confirm, obviously, next week, our last episode. And I hope everyone enjoyed the show. Have a great week, guys.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.